This episode of the Energy Stoners Cafe is sponsored by the Black Arts Matter Network, blackartsmatter.net. Welcome to the Energy Stoners Cafe. My name is Toni Quest, and I'm really happy that you're here. I like to interview the most interesting people I can find on the planet. So grab a cup of coffee, sit down, relax, and listen. You're going to find that these guests are so intriguing, you'll wonder why you didn't know about them before. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Energy Stoners Cafe. I hope everybody's relaxed today. I hope everybody has a nice beverage, kick back, just listen, relax. I have a great guest as usual, but I have a really special guest today, and I'm very, 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 she's very special to me. She's a good friend of mine. Her name is Adria Gross. She is an expert in health insurance, but she's an advocate for medical insurance. And she's written a book, which I really recommend you read, especially if you have medical insurance, and even if you don't. It answers a lot of questions. The name of the book is Solved: Curing Your Medical Insurance Problems. And this is very good because you get a lot of very interesting advice that you might not even think that you needed. And I'm really happy she's on because I know there are a lot of people that don't even know they have a medical insurance problem until they have the problem. And I'm going to talk to Adria about a little bit about her story, which is extraordinary, I have to say. That's why I recommend you read it. And I always like to recommend to Adria that she has two books in this book, but it's definitely worth the time to read it because I know that most people will relate to it one form or another. So, Adria, welcome to the show. Thank you for finally being on my show. I've wanted you to come on for a while, and now you're here.
Well, thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
It's my pleasure completely. Now, Adria, like I read your story in the beginning before you get into the insurance nitty-gritties. I was really touched by it, and I've known you for a couple of years, and this is something I didn't know about you, that you have a seizure disorder, and your whole journey, from the way I'm reading your book, seems to start with you passing out in Lord and Taylor and getting arrested. Tell the audience about that a little bit. I found that like extraordinary that it would be that way, that you would find out that there was a problem with your health and with your insurance.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm going to start out, before I tell you that story, I want to tell you why this even happened, what brought me to that point. When I was growing up, 11 and a half years old, I was born and raised in Port Jervis, New York. That's where the Pennsylvania, New York, New Jersey come together. I was taking horseback riding lessons just outside of Port Jervis. And I was totally unaware of anything like this happening. But an insect bit a horse carrying encephalitis, and the insect bites me. Now, look, you could have a mosquito bite, and all it's going to do is itch you, and maybe even get a little bit swollen. But I was 11 and a half. I was in sixth grade, and I was at the one and only synagogue in Port Jervis. And I wasn't feeling well. I raised my hand. I told the rabbi. He thinks I was trying to get out of this test. We had a map of Israel on how to write down the cities. And he finally allows me to go down the hall, and I sat in a chair and went into a coma.
Wow.
So from that, and the coma lasted for 10 hours, but from that day on, and when I tell you about Lord and Taylor's, this was before I had brain surgery due to that insect bite. So when I went into the coma, this was published in Reader's Digest. It was really weird. I felt like I was Dorothy in the Wizard of Oz waking up out of this dream. When I looked straight ahead and I saw a cross on the wall, but to the right was the rabbi and to the left was my parents. And it was like, holy cow, where am I? But that encephalitis, inflammation of the brain, caused me to live with epilepsy until I had brain surgery. So prior to having the brain surgery, and this was about, I'd say maybe 3 to 5 years before, I was in Lord & Taylor's, and I was looking for a watch for someone as a gift for their birthday. All of a sudden, I went into a grand mall, fell on the floor in this watch area on the first floor right on Fifth Avenue in Manhattan. And what would happen is every time I would have a grand mal, when I would come out of a seizure, it would take me a while to talk again. But I knew that I had to get out of there and I had to go back home because I was leaving for Maine for a short vacation. So they had me roped in over by the area where they had the watches, and I couldn't talk. So I got up and I was like scooting outside the store, and they stopped me and handcuffed me and then took me. I'm on Fifth Avenue getting into a police car. I didn't feel anything, of course, but they took me to a hospital in the Upper West Side. And when I came out of the seizure, I really wasn't totally out of the seizure. I guess I was out of the seizure, but it took me sometimes 4 hours before I could speak again. So here I am. When I left Lord & Taylor's, I had the handcuffs. My hands were behind my back. And I sat in the police car with the handcuffs on. And wow. I went into this hospital on the Upper West Side, into the emergency room. And again, I could barely talk, but I was crying. And I was able to indicate that I wanted those handcuffs taken off. And the nurse said to the police, "You have to take those handcuffs off of her and let her go." And so I left the hospital. They took the handcuffs off. I took the subway home. But again, I remember I couldn't even speak until I got home. It was very hard for me. But that's how the book started. That story was written in 1995 because a friend of mine had recommended this story really become a movie, but we sent it off to HBO and HBO was not interested. But I was told at that time, and look, we're talking 1995 when I wrote that chapter. Ever since then, I've been thinking, you know, how my life has turned around and how I would love people to know about it, because life can be tough for a lot of people, but you have to find a way to deal with things. I mean, sometimes people, their illness cannot be cured, and they have to find a way to cope with it. I'm in the midst of publishing another book exactly about my feelings having this condition for so many years and other people with different conditions and how it feels to be rejected by society due to your condition.
It's extraordinarily inspiring that you actually went through this. I cannot imagine what it was like, or I can only imagine what it was like. It sounds like you've gone through some humiliating experiences through no fault of your own because of your illness. What's it like to be someone? I know people in my own family that have epilepsy. And I'll be honest, sometimes you don't even realize they're having a seizure until they come out of it.
Yeah, the reason why that happens is because very often when you see someone, they might be standing, they might be sitting. A lot of times they might not be able to answer you and their face looks blank. And when you see that, where they're sitting there like with a blank face, and if they can't talk to you, there's a good chance they might be having a seizure.
You might not know that they can't. You just know that they're not talking to you.
Right. Or they might say things that don't make any sense, because that happened to me. Where I would be sitting. Sometimes I would, when I would have a focal seizure or a petit mal, I used to get all different types of seizures depending upon the medication I was on. And again, at one point I was on 32 pills a day and I used to average 18 seizures a month. But the seizures changed with the medication. A lot of times when someone's having a focal seizure or petit mal, they won't fall on the floor. They are just going to stare into space and they might do some weird things. Like one time I remember I would be drinking coffee and not knowing what I was doing, I would just pour the coffee over. And hopefully not harm me or anybody else.
Wow.
You know, we just like tip the cup on the side, you know, because again, you're not really aware of what's going on around you. I remember one time I was in Queens, New York, and my mother was driving a car for us to visit a friend who was in a nursing facility. And I remember being in Queens and my mom was driving and we had gone 10 blocks. I said, "Mom, I think I just had a seizure because this is not where you were before I went into seizure." And, you know, she had a tough time with it, and it was really hard for her to admit that I had this condition.
I think that often I've heard this from other parents. I'm not a parent, but I've heard parents say they feel responsible for their children's illnesses in some respect, even though it's not their fault. What was it like for you in school having seizures? I mean, you were in school, did you have seizures in the middle of the classroom?
Yeah, you know, a lot of times I was taken to the hospital. They would take all the jockeys, like when in high school, I remember this, like the football players, they'd all come in and they would carry me, you know, on this, I don't know what you would call it, but they would carry me to the nurse's office, and then an ambulance would come pick me up at the nurse's office and take me to the hospital. I had so many hospital visits because of the grand mals. One time, I thought it was pretty funny. I had a grand mal up in the Boston area, and a fire truck came to get me. And I remember waking up in the hospital. I remember that day in particular where I couldn't speak for 4 hours after that grand mal. And when I had the grand mal, I was in this restaurant that's no longer in existence. It was a chain. And I remember waking up and finding my face in the plate of the food.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it was crazy, you know, but I couldn't talk for at least 4 hours. Mm-hmm. And rather than ambulance, it was a fire truck that took me to the hospital.
I think that, you know, when I look at your book, it seems that I'm really, you know, trying to encapsulate it and make it somewhat a little easier for the audience to understand, although they really should read it. Your medical problems with the medical insurance problems, they start with, first of all, you have to be covered for the actual incident that's happening at that moment. But your condition sounds like something that you have to have enough insurance or the proper insurance to be able to maintain a level of healthfulness.
Well, I'll tell you a story about that, too. If something is, I have two cases right now related to this. I just want to, you know, tell people that after I had the brain surgery, and it was very interesting, the woman who did the EKG came in the next day. The surgery took at least 6 hours because what they do is they put neurons on the brain, and if you can answer, they can cut. If you can't answer, they can't cut. It's very interesting. Mm. So they cut me open, and they would put neurons on my brain, and I do not remember a thing about the questions, but she came to me the next day and she says, "You're going to be seizure free, but don't tell anybody because if I'm wrong, we could get sued." So, but listen, I was blessed and I have been seizure free. But after I had the brain surgery, I said to myself, "What am I going to do now?" I really didn't want to go back into the garment industry. I worked for a lingerie company for 10 years. And I said, "I don't want to do that because, you know, all these stores were closing. You know, B. Altman's and Alexander's. And, you know, this is going on throughout the United States." Yeah, so I thought to myself, okay, what am I going to do? It wound up being I came through the back door of an insurance company where they taught me how to deny claims within 2 weeks. And after working for that company, I went to another very large insurance company that was worldwide. And again, within 2 weeks, they taught me how to deny. But then I also went into underwriting. So I learned, as a claims examiner, you know, what to do. The first thing taught me was deny. And then I saw how people would complain and get their cases reversed. And I remember getting phone calls, especially at the second insurance company, from the CEO's office. And they would call me up and say, "Hey, you need to pay that claim." But I learned how to twist their arms. But I just want to tell people, be very, very careful with what you purchase, because some of these policies out there, which policies are now being sold by two major insurance companies. And guess what? Some of these policies have a pre-existing condition. That was supposed to be erased with the ACA Act. But I guess because of political reasons, the law has changed where they are still able to sell these policies. And currently, I have two cases where it was a pre-existing condition, and I have to fight to get those bills reduced because, listen, one of the bills is like $100,000.
Oh.
And normally, the hospital, the guy was in there like, I don't know, maybe one or two nights. But I know the hospital would not get paid more than, let's say, between $25,000 to $45,000. But they're getting charged for $100,000. So I have to be there fighting for these people.
What is the ACA Act? Just backtrack a little bit. What is the ACA Act, just for the audience to understand what that is?
Oh, there's so much involved. The major thing that happened with the ACA Act is there was the good and the bad. The good was everybody was entitled to have insurance. Prior to that, if you had a pre-existing condition, a lot of insurance companies would not insure you unless you worked for a major corporation. And even if you worked for a major corporation, and let's say you had a pre-existing condition, whether it be heart, diabetes, epilepsy, even autism, there is no way that they would pay those claims because it was a pre-existing condition. And again, only the large corporations would cover you. But even the large corporations that did, sometimes they had employees there who, like myself, had epilepsy or, let's say, diabetes or a heart condition or, you know, autism or even cancer. And they would not only, you know, like if they did work for a large corporation, a lot of times the following year, if they had a lot of claims, they would increase the premium so high that they had to go look for another insurance company. That was the downfall prior to the ACA. And it, you know, it really started with Obama. Obama introduced it. And the good thing was now everybody was covered. But if you look at your premiums, your copays, your deductibles, I am telling you, people are losing money in so many different ways because you have these high deductibles. I remember about 10 years ago, I had a client. If he saw an out-of-network provider, he had to pay out-of-pocket $44,000.
Wow, that's insane.
Before they would even cover him for his bills. On top of that, the premiums went up, the deductibles went up, the copays went up. So really, before, when you're paying your premium and you've got all these deductibles, a lot of times what I saw happening is a family, before they would get paid a penny from their insurance company, they were shelling out between $25,000 to $35,000 a year before anything would get paid.
But most people don't have that amount of money to shell out. What happens to people? Because most people, I'm just talking about most people, do not have that kind of money. How do they afford their health care? Do they just succumb to the disease? I mean, what have you actually seen in general? Like, what is your take on that? To me, it's unfathomable.
It's very expensive for us to live.
Yeah.
You know, and God forbid you wind up in a hospital. I mean, even with the insurance, it's getting harder because a lot of times you might have a high deductible. You know, and I also want to share something else that people should know. Let's say you go to an out-of-network provider, and let's say that provider charges you $1,000. According to the procedure codes on there, they might only have a right to charge you $200 instead of $1,000.
Mm-hmm.
But they're an out-of-network provider, and they can charge you anything they feel like. So you're only entitled to $200. So let's say you reach your deductible for the year.
Mm-hmm.
you're not going to, when you submit that claim, you're not going to get $1,000. You're going to get, if you've already, you know, met your deductible, you're only going to get $200. And that $800 is not going towards your deductible, even if you didn't have it yet, only $200 will.
But what about things like, you know, I'm thinking about people on Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. Medicare is a big one for the baby boomers, because even if we're not on straight up Medicare, many of us are opting into these Advantage plans, I think they call them.
Yeah.
How does that play into all of this? Because as we get older, things just start to go wrong a little bit here and there most of the time, I imagine. I don't know most of the people. I don't know everybody's claim, but I can imagine that as you get older, you know, you're filing more medical insurance claims through Medicare some way, somehow.
So that when you are going on to Medicare, first of all, if you're on Medicaid, you really don't have much to worry about anything. You really don't have, most people who are on Medicaid do not have a copay or deductible. Everything is covered. Even dental is covered. And that normally happens before the age of 65. But if you're on Medicare, your premium is going to be a lot less than it was with one of the commercial insurers, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
Your deductibles are going to be lower. But I always advise people, if you can afford it, do not, and I'll repeat it, do not purchase a Medicare Advantage plan, because, first of all, there are limited coverages. And you really have to read that fine print before you purchase it. You have to see, even in New York City, there is a hospital that the Medicare Advantage plan will not cover you for. So you really need to see the hospitals, the doctors, the medication before you even decide to go on an Advantage plan. So let's say you're pretty healthy and you go on an Advantage plan. But now, like 5-10 years later, you're getting pretty sick and you're going to need that Medicare plan. Well, what I learned recently, which I didn't know before, I do know the Advantage plans will kick you out of the hospital or rehab much sooner than they would with Medicare.
Mm-hmm.
But a Medicare Advantage plan, you've been on it, now you want to switch over to Medicare. For you to get a supplement, because Medicare pays 80% of the reasonable customary charges or the allowed fee amount according to Medicare rights, But if you need to switch over later and go on direct Medicare, you're going to have a very, very difficult time to be able to get a supplement, which is normally the other 20%.
Oh.
When they see your history, they're not going to want to insure you. So that's what happens when someone is on Advantage plan and now they're switching over to the basic Medicare plan, no matter what letter it is.
So we should just stay on, let's say you're on a Medicare Advantage plan. It's best just to stay, you know, stay in place. Don't start switching around.
Well, you might have a tough time getting a supplement. And you're going to be responsible for that 20% after Medicare pays the 80%.
Yeah, yeah. Even though you might be on a plan that promises to pay that 20% for you.
It's not going to happen. If you go to direct Medicare, they only pay 80%.
Period. End of story.
Right. Now, the Advantage plan, you know, a lot of doctors like the Advantage plan because it pays right away. They always complain that they have to wait to get longer to get paid by Medicare. But I know if I was on an Advantage plan and now I'm getting really sick, and I do happen to be very healthy. I'm really on no medication. I just take a lot of vitamins. But if you get really sick, like if I had an Advantage plan now and now I get sick 10 years from now, I'm going to have a rough time getting that supplement that's going to pay the other 20%.
That's very complex, it sounds like.
There's so much to know. I mean, I've been in the industry for 32 years, and you know, there's just so much, and every day there's new stuff happening.
Yeah, it's a constant thing, and I also think it depends on a lot of political things. It seems that Medicare has become like a political issue. like some people think everybody should have Medicare no matter what age you're at. But we know that when people get to a certain age, especially when they approach their 60s, and there are so many baby boomers out here, that Medicare is going to be a part of their life if they are smart, I think. I'm not sure. You tell me.
Well, by the way, the more money you make, the higher the premium is on Medicare.
Okay.
You know, if you don't make much money, the premium is going to be a lot lower. I think right now it starts out the lowest for Medicare alone for Part A and B, which is only the 80%. Right now, I think this year the premium is almost $150 a month. Then you need your supplement, and then you have to, and I highly recommend this, to get your prescription plan right away, because if you decide, let's say it's 75 to get it, you're going to be paying a heck of a lot more money.
What part of Medicare is prescription? Is that Part B?
That's Part D, as in David.
Part D, okay, as in David.
You've got A, which is hospitalization, B, which is like tests and doctor visits and all that kind of stuff, not the hospital bill. And then you have your supplement, which will pay the 20%, where Medicare is paying 80%. So even for your supplement, you have to pay a premium on that, which is not that inexpensive. I think that I'm paying $130 for mine every month. So right there, that's $280 plus my prescription. So I'm paying about $300 or more a month. But if you are under the age of 65, you might be paying over $1,000 a month.
Oh, I think, though, that with Medicare, if you're on, assuming you're receiving Social Security, they'll take that premium right out of your Social Security check. That's my understanding. Am I correct on that?
I don't know. I'm not there yet.
Okay. Yeah. It depends on if you're there yet, but that's what I understand.
Right.
And so it's very tricky. So how do people get involved with you? Like, what do you do if someone has like a major problem with their health insurance?
So what I do is I don't sell insurance. I help people when they have problems with medical bills. And I'll give you an example. Right now, there's a case that I've been working on for a few months. The gentleman, he happened to be a news reporter for one of the New York City TV stations, and his wife works for a hospital. So he had two different policies for Medicare. Hers was really like a supplement for his, or it was the primary, and then he had Medicare also. And the Medicare really came from his past employer. But the issue was, and he was in a rehab, the family came to me about the rehab. They stopped paying him at one point, saying, hey, you know what? You don't need to be in this rehab any longer. It could have been fought. They switched him over to Medicare, and he had 20 days with no insurance at all. But my argument has been, first of all, you really should have fought for him, you know, to keep him there longer, for him to stay there. That was number one. Number two, they did not bill both of his insurance carriers. You know, he had the policy through the hospital and he had the policy through his past employer.
Oh.
You have to make sure that they're working hard to be able to do that for you. I mean, they didn't switch him over when he came into that facility, and they could have done it. They could have already applied for Medicare, but they didn't. And they also had him staying at that facility for another 20 days where they charged him more than what they were getting paid by the insurance companies. And they didn't even ask him or inform him what the consequences would be if they kept him there. They didn't tell him how much they were going to bill him daily. They didn't send, as I said, they didn't send the bills to both the insurance carriers or both of those policy holders, you know, the policies where they came from. So there was a lot of bad faith there. And they're after him for a lot of money. So that's a case I'm working on. But, you know, there are advocates out there like myself. There aren't too many of us. I think, I don't know, people who really have experience in this field, maybe throughout the United States, there's possibly 50 to 100 of us, possibly. So you really need someone who's experienced. I mean, I used to help write the policy, so I know policies. I can, you know, read them very well, knowing what they're talking about. And even when you look at your, you know, your brochure or whatever they send you, I mean, it's pretty easy for me to understand it. And, you know, I tell people all the time, see what your coverage for, see what your exclusions are. But if you ever have an issue, you know, you're welcome to call me. My name is Adria Gross. I'm the owner of MedWise Insurance Advocacy. And my email and my website is www.medicalinsuranceadvocacy.com. You can go in and you can just contact us. You can send me that right through the website. And if you want my phone number, it's 845-978-9493, 845-978-9493. Again, it's www.medicalinsuranceadvocacy.com.
I think that I just want to point out to the audience that, you know, this is something that you got into because of your own needs. And also, I want to remind the audience of what you said earlier, that you were working on the other side of the fence, where you were actually working for, it sounds like, an insurance company, and that you were there specifically to deny claims.
Right. That's the first thing they teach you how to do, is how to deny, because they don't want to pay out all this money.
Right. And so it makes you feel, I mean, from where I sit as a layperson, I mean, I'm like on the other end of it. It makes you feel like you're a little bit under attack, like people are trying to help you fail. So what is the rationale besides money? Is there any other rationale besides money that they would have for you to deny claims? And I imagine you've come across some claims that you saw as completely legitimate.
You know, sometimes, see, part of the problem is that people never really read the policy, and there are exclusions. Like this pre-existing condition, you know, please read, please, you have to read it, because that's an exclusion, and you really have to think about it. Like I did, one of my clients, she didn't realize that this procedure they were going to do on her, she was being treated during that 12 or 24 month period. You know, and now she's in a position where I'm going to have to negotiate that case for her, because there's no way they're going to pay it, because she did have a pre-existing condition. That's why I tell people all the time, if you're purchasing a policy, you want to see what you're covered for and what you're not covered for. That's the most important thing you need to look at.
I mean, the pre-existing condition is that you're a human being, you know? And that's the way I look at it. That's my pre-existing condition. And I imagine it must have affected you in a personal way for you to actually switch teams like that and become an advocate. I can imagine some cases that you've seen, you know, where you're in a position to actually, that you're hired to deny a claim, but then you know that it's actually a legitimate claim. So what did people normally do? Did they just cave? Do they just die?
You know what? I tell people all the time, it might not matter to you, but what if you see this bill for $100,000? I will tell you about a case that I overturned recently. It was out in California. And this gentleman, when he turned 65, he went to his employer. This is an international company. And he says to him, he says, at 65, he says, you know, I guess I'm ready for Medicare. And they said, don't worry about it. You know, we're going to cover you. Well, at 75 years old, they pushed him out. And he was in and out of this hospital in San Francisco. And the bills, believe it or not, totaled $622,000.
Darn.
And they were, this is the, before they hired me, the family hired me, they would pay it, they would take it back. They'd pay it, take it back. That happened 5 or 6 times. So now the family found me. They get me involved. I got into the case. I went. The fact that this is such a large corporation, they're an ERISA plan. There's a self-funded, self-insured ERISA plan where the insurance company is like a third-party administrator, because that employer is going to give, like, let's say, $1 million, $10 million to the insurance company to go ahead and process the claims. But the one who's really making the decision on those claims is the employer, because let's say the employer feels, God, we paid out all this money, let's get it back. I'm sure that's what happened in this case. And so when the family came to me, I called the insurance company. I'm pretty well known at the executive offices of quite a few of the major insurance companies. So I called the executive office of this insurance company. I was dealing with them, the employer, the lawyer for the employer, and it took about 9 months, but finally I was able to get them to pay out the claims. And just today, in fact, you know, I wrote another letter to the hospital because it's hard for them to respond to me unless I tell them, hey, I'm going to your manager. Because I must have contacted them at least 4 or 5 times. And she did respond today when I wrote manager, right? And she says, Adria, yeah, they don't owe us any more money. You know, they don't owe us any more money, which I was thrilled about. But there's still some issues with some of the checks because some of the stuff was paid twice. And now I was dealing with a collection agency today. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I tell people all the time, don't give up. Please don't give up, because if you give up, you're going to be paying out a lot of money. And there are situations where you're not responsible. You know, what I do for people is I help them if their claims are denied, out of network, overcharged, they can't get pre-authorization. I see a lot of the claims right now for long-term care policies not being paid out. I think it's because they don't have the money. So I'm helping a lot of people when they've had denials for long-term care. I'm working on a case right now because you really need to understand that policy. And you have to emphasize that they meet the criteria of that policy and they should be covered. And I'm pretty sure that I'm going to be able to overturn this case.
Wow, that's exciting for somebody, you know. Long-term care, that's a big thing too, because if you have a pre-existing condition that often will require you to have long-term care, they certainly don't want to cover you, or they make the premium unaffordable. Completely unaffordable. That's interesting to me. The other thing I want to ask you, because I know we only have about 2 minutes left, and I just have to get this in, because these days, especially baby boomers, and also I find the millennials are like this too, they tend to look towards alternative practice, alternative types of medical care, wellness practitioners, you know, the massage therapists, the doctors of chiropractic, the people that are selling alternatives to taking RX. They'll do something that's more natural remedies. And those things are not covered. There are doctors that practice it that I know for fact. What's going on with that? Will there ever be a time where you go to a naturopathic doctor, someone that is doing something that is natural and not hurting you, but it's not an RX kind of medicine? Will there ever be a time where we'll have coverage for something like that? Do you ever fight for those kinds of claims?
No, I don't know, but I had a case recently of a young kid in the state of Florida. I am a national company. I help people all throughout the United States. I have an office in New York State, and I have another office in New Jersey. But I have to say, there are some policies out there who will cover it. Most policies will not. And even in the case with that boy, I have to tell you, the father's paying out at least $100,000 a year of medical bills. And he's not able to get monies except for some of the blood work. That's it.
Like the blood work that the alternative practitioner might need, they'll pay for that blood work?
Right. And then the other thing that I saw happening with that case is a lot of times when the bills were sent out, they didn't have enough information on there. When you're submitting a bill, you need a procedure code, diagnosis, the federal tax ID number, the national provider identification number for the provider, which is a 10-digit number. You need your name, address, you know, who the provider is, their name and address. But if these things aren't on the bills, you're not going to get paid. But I do find that a lot of times they'll pay for the lab bills. But if that information is not on there, it's not going to be paid. You're going to have to fight it. You're going to have to get the information on the bill.
It's like you have to have a PhD just to fill out the form.
Really,
you know? You're talking, and somehow you've been able to encapsulate all this stuff, and you understand it, and that's why we need more people like you, Adria. We do. You know, I know people that are going through some changes, you know, and you just don't. And also the fact that when these things happen, it's a medical problem, and so you're in a weakened state. You know, so it's just seems unfair that you'd have to go through that under the circumstances. But I'm giving myself the cue that I want to interview you again because I still have more questions to ask you. If you'll indulge me and come back on the show in the foreseeable future.
I would love to come back. Thank you so much for having me on. And again, I'm Adria Gross. My phone number is 845-978-9493. Keep yourself healthy, and hopefully you'll never, ever need my services.
Yeah, thank you so much, Adria. And everybody, she's coming back because I want to talk to her more about this. We, as you know, we have doctors that come on our show and talk about a lot of different things, but now we have, it looks like we're on the cusp of a resident insurance expert, you know, our go-to. But, you know, your information is so valuable, and a lot of people don't even realize that they need you until they need you. That's the part that kind of I find very unsettling. That's why I want you to come back on.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I appreciate it. And the book is Solved, Curing Your Medical Insurance Problems by Adria Goldman Gross.
It's available on Amazon. Solved, exclamation point, curing, C-U-R-I-N-G, your medical insurance problems. Endorsed by Ralph Nader.
Yes, and it's endorsed by Ralph Nader. And anybody that's been around long enough to know him, he's a serious dude. You know, he doesn't endorse it unless it's real. So thank you again, Adria. Thank you, audience, for listening again, for coming to the Energy Stoners Cafe. I imagine one day actually having an Energy Stoners Cafe where I'll broadcast from there. And you know what else goes on in those cafes, but it's a healthy place to be. So come back soon. Thank you so much. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to the Energy Stoners Cafe.